The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking level, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Judgment out on Donald Trump, and he deserved it after acting like a chump. I know that this time he won't be escaping from making payments to that woman he'd been raping. I have a feeling that he will find a way to hide his assets and never have to pay. Go bankrupt. You can continue all your dirty deeds. Why not go bankrupt and keep your properties? Another guy, but not a billionaire. You'll recognize the black stuff dripping from his hair. He couldn't help that nasty odor kept escaping when he was speaking at the Four Seasons Landscaping. That's right, you guessed it, Rudy is his name. He'll have to pay off those two women he defamed. Go bankrupt. You can continue all your dirty deeds. Why not go bankrupt and keep your property?
That's the end of it. I forget that Patrick Fitzgerald often just fades out in mid-tune. I was rocking out. You know, give me a King song anytime. But that was Patrick Fitzgerald with Go Bankrupt. Sending that one out to Donnie and Rudy. Welcome to a Wednesday. But it's my Friday. So let me tell you, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen today. Because, first of all, I'm so excited that my kid is coming in. I've never been away from her for 4 months before. And I haven't seen her since we left Florida at the very end of September. So it's been a while. I just got a text from her. She's in North Carolina. She got on an earlier flight somehow. And now she's got a long layover in North Carolina before she gets to Phoenix. And I just checked. The flight she's supposed to be on gets in at like 11:35 tonight, which I'm usually asleep by then. But there's another one that leaves North Carolina like 6-something and gets in here like 8:30, which would be perfect. So hopefully she can get on that. I'm kind of excited. Yeah, I'm giddy. So just to remind you, I will be off tomorrow and Friday, Thursday and Friday, and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. I'll be back next Thursday. I've got great best of shows planned for you. So, but they'll be on the audio stream exclusively. So you'll listen at progressivevoices.com, and maybe at NicoleSandlerStream.com. I will try to post the podcast so they go up every day, you know. Best laid plans. Like today. So we've got some news to get to that we will in a moment, but I got to tell you, I'm supposed to have a guest today. Except, you know, my producer, she's been so preoccupied with getting these best of shows together to, you know, to cover while my daughter is here. And I've just been scattered. Go figure me, scattered. Anyway, so my guest, I was perusing the Facebooks the other day, and I come across a thing about this book. Well, you see, it's written by Charlie Serafin. Charlie Serafin was my boss in Los Angeles at a radio station called KNX-FM. And then it changed formats once. It was still KNX-FM then. And then it became KODJ. Anyway, I worked there for, I don't know, like 3 years or something. And I left there to go produce the Mark and Brian show at KLOS. And so Charlie was my boss. I have not spoken with him since I left that day at the end of June 1990. But he sent this book, a lovely inscription. I'll show you. He wrote, just so you know, I'm not making it up. He wrote, "Nicole, looking forward to catching up with one of my favorite people in the world." So, but of course, I'm so scattered this week that I didn't email him the specifics until this morning. You know, the Zoom link and just the URL and all the stuff. Although we did say we'll do it Wednesday, February 7th at 3:30 Arizona time. So if he's here, he's here. If he's not, it's my fault. Just because, so I emailed him this morning, I haven't heard back yet. And again, you know, it producer overload. So if he shows up, great. If not, we just have more time to talk about all the news that's going on. So let's start with that, shall we? Oh my goodness. So let's recap, right? So yesterday morning, we got the news that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously rejected the former guy's claims of absolute immunity and everything that went along with that. We had Marcy Wheeler come in for a special Tuesday edition of Empty Wheel Friday, which is good because she won't be here this Friday. Although this Friday, the show that I have scheduled is the first time Marcy was ever on this program, and it was back in 2011. So just a blast from the past. We're doing old news, new news, you know, stuff like that. All right. So I'm kind of wired. Can you tell? No drugs or anything, just me. Anyway, so that was yesterday morning. Now last night was classic. Last night, I'll never forget. I saw an alert came across my phone. I get a ding alert, and it was something about that the impeachment, the House impeachment of the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, failed. There was no way this should have failed because, well, if Mike the Little Johnson knew how to count votes, or if he learned anything from his Democratic predecessor, Nancy Pelosi, he would have known you don't bring a vote to the floor until you've counted the votes and you know you have enough to win, right? So what happened? Well, oops. It was not a good day for them. Oh, you know what? I don't have the gaveling. When Mike Johnson had to say the final vote was 214 for impeachment, 216 against. The motion failed. Now, it was tied 215 to 215. But I guess, see, they thought they had the votes because it was 215 to 214 for a moment. And then in a moment of high drama, in wheels Representative Al Green of Texas. Yeah, Al Green is kind of, he's quirky. He's kind of eccentric. He's kind of, you know, he's Al Green. What can I tell you? Not, I'm so tired of being alone. Not that Al Green. Congressman Al Green from a part of Houston, right? He's been in Congress for a while and he was pushing for the impeachment of Donald Trump like numerous times before the Democratic House was ready to actually impeach Trump. But this time, Al Green had been in the hospital. He had emergency intestinal surgery on Friday. Today's only Wednesday. He was in the hospital. He signed himself out and called for an Uber to take him to the Capitol. And then I guess Hakeem Jeffries heard that he was doing that and sent a car for him. And, well, this was Al Green's comment on it. He said he had no idea that his was going to be the vote that tied the vote. And he just wanted to do it because it was the right thing to do.
I wanted to do all that I can because I know Secretary Mayorkas. He's a good, decent man. And I didn't want to see his reputation tarnished. I wanted to cast my votes, and I returned. And I have been informed that the vote made a difference. And I'm pleased that it made a difference.
He's pleased that it made a difference. It did make a difference because it tied it up. So it was 215 to 215, right? Which means that it's a loss. The Republicans would have won, and they would have impeached for the only the second time in American history a sitting cabinet member. But it went down because if it's a tie, it fails. They have to win by at least one vote. And so it was 215 to 215. Who was it? I'm drawing a blank. One of the members of leadership, then at the very last moment flipped his vote to against. That's a procedural thing so that they can bring it back up again. Now, the Republicans, again, they have a very, very, very tiny, slim majority in the House. But there were even one vote short of where they needed to be because Steve Scalise has been out, getting cancer treatment. So he's not there. What are they doing today? Scrambling to try to get Steve Scalise back so they could bring the vote up again. So one of the members of leadership, I forget who it was. It's a name that I wasn't familiar with before, honestly. Changed his vote, so that allows them to bring this back up again. But there's a distinct time period in which they can do it, and I'm not quite sure when what the time frame is. Is YouTube screwing up again? YouTube is being funky today. What else is new? This is one thing I have to do before I come back next week. It looks like it's back up again now, but YouTube, I don't know. Anyway, so that's what's happening with the impeachment of Mayorkas. It didn't work. Now, one of the biggest instigators of this impeachment was Marge Q. Green. I got to play this video for you because it was actually one of my favorite things of the day. It doesn't get a whole lot better than this. This is so good. Let's see. Where's the okay, here it is. I got to get the video up so you can see it. But once again, my favorite thing that happened yesterday. Even better than, well, maybe it's tied with the DC Court of Appeals telling Trump, you have no immunity, that's ridiculous, was Jamie Raskin following this failed impeachment of Mayorkas. Now, I do have to give you an aside before we start that. And of course, do I not have it up here? Damn it. Oh, I know where I have it. Hold on. So Marge the other day, She's a one-woman comedy show all on her own. So the other day, she's reading, trying to act like a member of Congress who knows what she's talking about. And she said this.
This historical evidence is overwhelming that the founding fathers intended impeachment to be used to deal with the commission of indictable crimes and the abuse of power.
To be used with the commission of what?
Indictable crimes.
Okay. So. Sorry. It's just too funny. So keep that in mind. And now. Here, Jamie Raskin yesterday after their impeachment of Secretary Mayorkas failed.
The gentleman from Maryland is recognized.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, Mr. Chairman. We're here because the madcap wild goose chase to impeach Joe Biden has produced no wild geese. Even Fox News is lampooning the fact that their own expert witnesses repeatedly say President Biden did nothing wrong and there are no grounds for impeachment. More than a dozen GOP members in Biden-majority districts don't want to go anywhere near that fantasy production. So the Trump-Putin mega faction, headed up by the distinguished gentlelady from Georgia, has been given this worthless trinket of a consolation prize, the opportunity to bring a slapstick impeachment drive against a cabinet member of unimpeachable integrity who has obviously committed no treason, no bribery, no high crimes, no misdemeanors, nothing indictable or even indictable, if you prefer.
Even indictable, if you prefer. Jamie Raskin. Oh, my God, how much do I love that man. Hold on. I'm going to cue into this again just because it's...
Who has obviously committed no treason, no bribery, no high crimes, no misdemeanors, nothing indictable or even indictable, if you prefer.
Jamie Raskin not only won the internet, he won the universe yesterday with that line. That was just perfect. Just perfect. And YouTube is messing with me again. I'm so sorry. By the way, the audio is streaming at progressivevoices.com. It's also probably on my stream at NicoleSandlerStream.com. You know, it's YouTube. I have an overhaul with YouTube coming up. It's going to have to happen because this is just not good. All right. So that happened. That I could listen to again and again and again. And when I heard that they lost this vote, It was just too perfect. I don't think anyone could make that up. There we go. That's weird. I'm having all kinds of gremlins today. So the Zoom went away and then it came back. Go figure. It's probably Cox messing with me. YouTube is not working. I'm sorry. Okay, so what else is going on? Let me tell you what else is going on. Let's see. Oh, back to the immunity thing where Trump has no immunity. It's obvious. I mean, I don't know why we had to wait 4 weeks to get the answer. But I do. The reason, and we talked about this yesterday with Marcy Wheeler, the reason is they did this joint opinion, the three judges from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals who heard Trump's appeal claiming that he was president, he has immunity. Well, so they issued this 57-page opinion in one voice, all three judges together. I forget the technical term, but you know what I'm talking about. And they wrote it impeccably, according to all the legal experts that I've checked in with. And chances are pretty good, say most of these legal experts, that the Supreme Court will just say, we're not even going to hear this. We're going to let the lower court ruling stand, which is the opinion we got yesterday. And then it gets kicked back to Judge Chutkan and it gets scheduled, we hope. But Trump's people responded. I guess Trump probably went off last night and started screaming. Of course, did a fundraising appeal because he's being persecuted and prosecuted and whatever. His spokesperson said in a statement that Trump respectfully, first of all, Trump does nothing respectfully, just saying, disagrees with the D.C. Circuit's decision and will appeal it. And then the statement goes on to say, if immunity is not granted to a president, every future president who leaves office will be immediately indicted or indicted by the opposing party. Well, you know what that is, right? Hold on. It's
bullshit.
It's bullshit. Because there have been 45 other presidents, 45 presidents other than the former guy, and none of them has ever either gone after his predecessor, and unfortunately they're all him, his predecessor, nor would they, nor do any of them have a reason to, other than Joe Biden, because none of those other 45 presidents committed treason against the country, tried to overturn a fair and free election. Donald Trump is the only one who's ever said, I need complete, absolute immunity because I'm going to do crimes. And if I can't be cleared, then what good is being president or something like that? You know, it's just, it is. I know I haven't played it in a while, but you know where we're living, don't you? Of course you
Facts
do.
No longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, Opposite World.
So that happened. All right, there's other news, too. You know, yesterday was the Republican Nevada primary. Nikki Haley was on the ballot. Donald Trump was not because he didn't participate in the primary, which apparently doesn't count for anything because there's a Nevada caucus, I think, happening tomorrow. Don't ask. None of it makes any sense. So I certainly can't explain it to you because I don't get it. But Nikki Haley was in the Nevada primary and she lost bigly. She lost by 63-31% to none of these candidates. None of these candidates got 63% and Nikki Haley got 31%. Now, and again, it didn't mean anything because the caucuses that happen tomorrow is going to be what will award the delegates. Go figure. Tomorrow's also a big day. Supreme Court tomorrow will hear arguments about the 14th Amendment and whether it disqualifies Trump from being on the ballot. So they expedited this. This dispute, of course, stems from the push by voters in Colorado to kick Trump off the primary ballot because of his participation in an insurrection, which the 14th Amendment, Section 3, says if you've done that, if you've previously taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, and you go ahead and participate in an insurrection or give cover to those who do or did, then you cannot. It does see that this is where it's not clear. You cannot run for president or you cannot be president. You cannot hold office again. So and many of the great legal minds are saying that this is just it's as simple as. Arnold Schwarzenegger cannot run for president because he wasn't born in the United States. He's not a natural born citizen. Same with Jennifer Granholm. She's Canadian. So, you know, they're saying that just the act of his participating how he did on January 6th, and he did more than just participate on January 6th, that would render him ineligible, yes, to hold the office, but also to, you know, to run because Arnold can't run. Mike Hirsch in the chat room is still enjoying Indictable. I know it lingers. It'll stay with you. It'll make you chuckle like later tonight during dinner, I think. Let's see. Tomorrow, again, the High Court has signaled that it will try to act quickly, dramatically shortening the period in which it receives written briefings, holds arguments in the courtroom. Tomorrow's arguments will mark the first time in history that the Supreme Court will have heard a case on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which was used to keep former Confederates from holding government offices after the amendment's adoption in 1868. Sorry. So there's that. What else? There's other stuff going on. And I keep glancing over. I'm afraid our guest is not going to be here. Let's see. Oh, okay. So this is more on Al Green that I kept. You know, Keith Boykin, who was on the show just last week, he tweeted this out or shitted it out or mastodoned it or wherever people are posting on social media these days. He wrote, Republicans are mad. that Democrats didn't tell them that Al Green would get out of his hospital bed to vote against their sham impeachment. They're so used to winning elections by suppressing the black vote that they think it's a trick when a black person actually does vote. And Hakeem Jeffries' response to the apoplexy over on the right, Hakeem Jeffries said, it's not our responsibility to let House Republicans know which members will or will not be present on the House floor. Well, there's that. There's some disturbing news in addition to everything else. And you know what? This is a subject that I have stayed away from lately because I know how divisive it is. I get it. And you know, I'm about to talk about Israel and Gaza again. First of all, there was a news item yesterday that said at probably 30% of the 130 or so hostages that were kidnapped by Hamas terrorists on October 7th, about 30% of them are dead. That should be no surprise to anyone. I have a feeling the little one-year-old boy who was 9 months old when he was kidnapped and taken hostage, I have a feeling he's dead. And it pains me to say that. And you know, I've been at odds with my progressive allies in that look, atheist Jew here, never considered myself part of any group, let alone, you know, Zionists or anything, because I'm not. However, My feeling is, and sorry, I've lost a number of listeners over this, but I'll say it anyway. My feeling is those hostages need to be returned and Hamas needs to be eliminated. But so does Benjamin Netanyahu. He's been a criminal. He's been a war criminal. They need to get rid of him. And so the news today is that Netanyahu rejected this new plan that's been working on. Secretary of State Blinken went over there to help negotiate this deal, and Netanyahu this morning said, no, he said that's a fantasy or some other nonsense, in rejecting the plan for the return of hostages and an end to the war. Netanyahu needs to go along with Hamas. They all need to be wiped off the planet. It's just, ugh. And I've been so good not to even talk about that subject lately because, you know, it hasn't been a good one for me here, but that's okay. You know me. I always say things, not necessarily the popular thing to say. All right. I'm very excited because I see my guest is here. I just have to get the shot set up. So here's the thing that Charlie doesn't know. You guys know, the listeners know. I do everything myself. I have no producer. When I bitch about my producer and say I need to fire her, I'm talking about me. Because, you know, I'd do much better if I had somebody else doing the work, but this is the story of my life. Anyway, talking about the story of our life, that's what the thing that caught my eye on the Book of Face when I saw this book. And, oh, no, and who's calling me now? Spocko, don't call me now because I have a guest. So I'm turning that down and I'm going to bring on Charlie Serafin. Hi, Charlie. God, it's been a long time. Oh, and I don't hear you. Are you muted? Because I do have sound from coming in. Mm-mm. The old radio guy is muted and I'm not hearing him. Let's see. No. Why am I not hearing you, Charlie? It says I'm talking. There you go.
How about now?
Now
okay,
I hear you.
Sorry about that.
So
the same thing. I'm my own producer here as
there
well.
There you go. There you go. So Charlie Serafin was my boss. I think the last time we saw each other was the end of June 1990 when I walked out of the CBS building on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles, left my job at KODJ, where I was your director of marketing and promotions, and went across the street to work with Mark and Brian at KLOS. I don't think we've seen each other since then.
I don't believe so. And your career definitely took off after you left. So that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. In fact, when I left, I got to tell you that this man here is the only person to ever give me a billboard. You put this billboard up on Sunset Boulevard. It says, Nikki, we'll miss you. And you can't really see it because the way the sun was, but it's your KODJ family. You did that for me. So that was.
Well, you were going on to bigger and better things. So I thought that was the appropriate thing to do.
Right. That's what you do.
I never got a billboard ever.
No, that's the only time I ever got one. Who knew? And now my Chiron's not working. Go figure. YouTube has given us problems today. This is a thing. So I got to show you one other thing. I have one picture of us together from those years ago. When we worked together here, I put this up on the show card for today. That's us in, I think it was 1988, maybe 89. The radio station we worked at, launched a campaign to get John Lennon a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It was in connection with the release of the movie Imagine. And that's why Yoko was there. And that's the poster behind me. But that's us and Denise Westwood and Yoko Ono in that photograph. The good old days.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Look at that white jacket.
Yeah. We were young. We were oh so much younger then. We're older than that
for
now.
Sure.
So Charlie Serafin. Now, before we worked together, you had come down from, in fact, I was already at the station before you arrived. It was KNX FM. You were the news director of KCBS up in San Francisco, and then they promoted you and brought you down to L.A.?
Correct.
That's how you got there?
Made me a GM for the first time. Uh-huh. Not the last, but the first time.
And I don't know if you remember this or not, but I still remember it very clearly. You know, I quit shortly after you got there because you brought in, I was co-hosting the morning show for like 5 minutes and you fired Warren Williams, who was the morning man that I was co-hosting with. And you brought in a guy named...
That sounds so terminal, you know. You fired him.
You did!
We went a different direction.
Right. Well, you brought in this guy, Scott Carpenter, who I didn't know who he was. And I sit down, I get in there that morning, and he goes on the air. He's taking the lead. And he's like, and now we're going to check in for the weather with the weather mama. And he looked at me, and I said, are you talking to me? And he goes, yeah, weather mama, what's the weather? And I somehow made it through the show, and I walked into your office, and I quit. Mm-hmm. And then I walked back to wherever I was based then. I didn't have an office at the time. And I said, well, that was kind of stupid. I don't have a job to go to. So I walked back in your office. I said, I just want you to know who you're losing. And I gave you my resume. And then the next day you called me and you said, I don't want you to leave. And Lois Rubin, who was the promotion director, was leaving to go to VH1. And you said, I don't know what we're going to have you do, but for now you do Lois's job. And I did that for like the next 2 years.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's funny because I just got a call this afternoon. Scott passed away a couple of years ago.
Oh.
And I just got a call this afternoon from his daughter who lives in Canada. And so we had a catch-up meeting. So it's sort of the reminiscing good and bad old times.
I guess. Well, he didn't last there very long either, because then we went through a whole bunch of changes. But
yeah. Corporate got involved and they screwed it up like they always do.
Yeah. Then we became KODJ. Here, I got this as well. This'll bring back some memories. Ooh. I have all these pictures, all these crazy pictures. This was a billboard that we put up on Sunset Boulevard. That Chateau Marmont, where John Belushi died, was like right to the right of that billboard, just up the hill there.
Hmm.
Yeah. So
very cool.
We did.
I don't have
things.
Any of those memories. I've got one pink cap, I think, from KODJ, the Day Glow pink caps that we did.
Right. No, I remember those. No. So anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about, but we had to go through that to establish the relationship. And now here we are, 30 some odd years.
Well, can I say something? Whatever. Yeah. How many years ago? If that was 90, so
90.
That's 34 years ago. You look fantastic. You really do.
Thank you.
And I'm being very serious. You haven't, You've aged a little, not very much.
Well, I'm 34 years older, so, you know. Yeah. But as they say, you're not getting older, you're getting better. So now you're also living in Arizona.
That's correct.
And I saw
we
that
live
you
live up in Payson.
I don't even know where that is.
Yeah, I know. Which you don't know where Payson is, but Payson is a little mountain community about an hour and a half up the mountain from the valley. So we're an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes maybe away from where you are
okay.
in Gilbert.
So, by the way, Terry Gladstone says hello. Remember Terry? So Terry,
sure.
Terry is now living in, like Cave Creek area. So she's about an hour north of where I am. In fact, I'll be seeing her next week because my daughter is coming to town. In case you didn't know, I have a daughter. I adopted Allison from Kazakhstan back 23 years ago. Time just flies. So it fits that you have this book, The Story of Your Life, Write Your Own Obituary. So this is your third book, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So you just are you self-published? You put these out and you do the whole thing? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I have some help. I have a professional editor in Cleveland, of all places, who's just a really brilliant guy and has done a nice job for me. And I have the guy who formats my books is in Boston. And I have a semi-publisher. The company is called Munn Avenue Press out of New Jersey. And they help me with Amazon algorithms, which I know nothing about.
Uh-huh.
But we're in the middle of an ad campaign now on Amazon, and we've had 197,000 clicks,
wow.
and sold $22 worth of books out of that. So it's
not
what you call a great ROI,
no,
but
I get it. It's this new. So gig economy, it's like here, you know, I do this show. I've done this show for I can't tell you how many years. I'm scraping by, you know, I refuse to put it behind a paywall because I'm old school radio. So I do the old school public radio model where if people enjoy the show, they get something out of it. If they can afford it, they donate. They chip in either a one-time donation or a monthly deal. And yeah, it's no way to live. But you know, it's old school. So that's what it is. But,
good for you.
Not really. But, you know, we keep going because that's what we know how to do. That's what I know how to do. I should talk for myself. The radio thing, this is what I know how to do. But the business has changed so much over the years. My listeners are sick of hearing me talk about it because, I'll just tell you one last thing. There's an article in the new issue, the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine, about the educational foundation media or something, EFM, I think is the name of the company. They're the K-Love people, the religious broadcasters who bought up all these signals around the country. And they are now the number two owner of radio stations after Clear Channel. Oh, sorry, iHeart Media. Out of nowhere, they bought PLJ in New York. They bought The Loop in Chicago. Those legendary heritage call letters don't exist anymore because they have K-Love, Jesus Loves You music on the radio. And it is sort of the counterpart to what they did with talk radio. It's music and it's couched in, you know, love and all things good and nothing offensive, except they're very right wing and conservative and they push that kind of stuff. And on top of it, they're designated as a nonprofit. So they're raking in the bucks.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfect. Yeah, that works perfect.
Of course.
I don't want to talk about radio. Radio is a sad chapter that
it really
ended
is.
A long time
All
ago.
Right,
we can remember our memories, but that's not where it is.
No. So here we are. It's 2024. Charlie Serafin, you are now an author, a lecturer, a motivational speaker. But this book intrigued me. When I read about it, it's like, that's a great idea. The story of your life, write your own obituary. So I've toyed with the idea of writing a book. Again, I've got these pictures. I've got stories up the wazoo from so many years of, you know, doing this job. And I've started to write, but I just stopped.
Okay, here comes Uncle Charlie's lesson on how to become an author.
Okay,
for you and for all of, because there's so many people say, well, you know, I know I've got a book, I just don't know, you know, how to do it. And then they try to create an outline or start writing and they get frustrated and they quit. So here's what my friend told me. When I, as you remember, because you've mentioned it, prior to coming to LA and manage the station in LA. And then I managed a station in Dallas and a couple stations in San Diego. But prior to that, I was a news guy. Mm-hmm. So I covered a lot of news stories and I was an anchor. So I wrote a lot of news copy. And when I went to work every day for years, I sat at a IBM Selectric typewriter, pre-computer, and typed out rewrites of AP, UPI, wire copy, and original stories and press releases and blah, blah, blah. So, and I read newspapers a lot and wrote. So every day I wrote, but I wasn't writing. I was just rewriting the news. And so I picked up the skill. I can type quickly, and I know how to write. So when I retired from my last job, which was working for the city of St. Augustine, and I was an adjunct professor in Florida, my friend John, who I've known forever, said, "You need to write." And I went, "Write what? You know, what am I going to write about?" And he said, "Just here's what you need to do. Listen carefully." And I'm telling you the same thing. Mm-hmm. Write every day. Mm. So it doesn't matter if you write a sentence. It doesn't matter if you write a paragraph, a page, or 55 pages. Just write. And I said, well, then what? He goes, you have a computer, right? So you just create a file and you can put a date on it. Here's Monday. And here's what I wrote on Monday. But don't try to write the book. Mm. Just write. So as you write, different things come to you. And when I got in the habit of writing every day, what I found is I would be inspired in the middle of the night. I'd wake up at, you know, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm a sleeper. Once I go to sleep, I don't wake up till morning.
Oh,
but I would wake up in the middle of the night for the first time in my life, and I would run into the office and sit down at the computer and go, oh, I got to crank this out. And then I would write some, you know, a page or something about whatever. And they were just totally unrelated topics. And after a while of doing this, I'm going to guess maybe about 6 or 8 months into it, I wrote an essay about a friend of mine who died. And when I wrote that essay, I went, oh my God, I've got a book. This is now I know what this is all about. So I went back and found all the other short essays that I had written. And I think there are 28 of them. And I put them together and tied them together with a theme. And the theme of the first book, it's called One Stupid Mistake, was decision making. How do we make decisions? And why do we make the decisions that we make? And so I told stories about other people making decisions. And sometimes as you start to read this story, you can go, well, this is not going to turn out well. You know, you can tell when somebody's heading down there. But when it's you, a lot of times you don't know that you're heading down this rabbit hole and it's not going to have a happy ending until you get to the end. Mm-hmm. So the whole subject of the book is decision making. Then I wrote another book. It was a pushback against social media, because I wanted to write something about personal branding. And I did some research, went on online, and I found out there are thousands, literally thousands of personal branding experts in the United States of America. Did you know that? Thousands.
Yeah. They all say, right.
Okay. And they all say the same thing. Exactly. They say project a consistent image across all platforms, which is what we hear, right? That's about branding, you know, make your image consistent, project it across. But projecting an image is the opposite of authenticity. So that really rubbed me the wrong way. So I said, and the title of that book is When Did You Stop Being You? And the idea is that so many of your fans who listen to you and watch you every day and pay attention to your every move are caught up in trying to take a picture of lunch and post that because that is going to somehow show them in a likable light. Mm-hmm. And it's just silly what we've done. We've gotten to the point where instead of just, you know, your opening when I came on, your comments about what's going on in the Middle East, they just come from the heart. That's authentic.
Well, that's me.
You're not projecting an image. You're not trying to win somebody over with an attitude that you've manufactured for the purpose of your program. You are talking from the heart. And when people talk from the heart and they're authentic, we're attracted to that because we can tell it's real and it's honest, and that's a good thing. So that was the second one. And then this last book, it was really funny how it came together, but my friend sent me his father-in-law's obituary. And this, his father-in-law was a Jewish gentleman, ironically enough, right, as we're having the conversation. And he was a lawyer, and he had written his own obituary. And I read the obituary, and the first thing I said was, I wish I had met this man. He was awesome. He's so funny, and he had self-effacing humor, and he was clever, and the way he used words and everything about his description of himself. And it was really poignant, his love for his family and how he expressed it and the memories that he shared about special things that happened to him in his life. And it was just powerful. And then the second leg of the journey was I went to my hometown a couple of years ago, and I went to the library and I pulled up my father's obituary, who died when I was young, when I was 12 years old. So I remember my father, but I didn't remember the funeral service or really anything about it. So I read that obituary and I went, oh my God, that doesn't say anything about my father. So this guy who wrote his own obituary told a really incredible story, life story that was powerful, and not just for people who knew him and loved him, but for anybody who reads it, they could be moved by the story of his life. And yet my father's obituary said absolutely nothing about him.
Right.
It just
most
said
do,
he was born.
Right? Most do. They say the person who they're survived by, where they lived, what they did for a living, but it doesn't give you any insight into the person, unless it's somebody right. who's really famous and they do a whole long thing. But for the average person, we don't know who they are from an obituary.
Yeah, but even the famous people, if you think about it, sometimes their relatives will write a tell-all story afterwards and you'll go, ooh, I didn't know that. Right. She was an awful mother, or, you know, he was a terrible father or whatever it was. But it's not expressed in their own words. And even if we're a terrible mother or a terrible father, if we talk about our life experiences and how we got to be who we are, it really clarifies a lot for those people who knew us or for people who didn't know us. And it's a wonderful exercise. You don't write your own obituary today or tomorrow. Some people think you have to wait till you're on your deathbed. I can guarantee if you wait that long, it's not going to happen.
Right.
But if you go through the reflective process of thinking about, what do you remember about when you were a child? What memories come to light? Some good, some bad. And then go to the next phase of life when you're a teenager and the first time you fell in love and when did you pick up your hobbies, the things that you really care about? Or if you have an association with a sports team or a religious affiliation or whatever it is, where did those things come from? What were the origins? And when you think about them, why do you hold them, in such high esteem now in your life? And when you figure that out, you can kind of figure out where you are. When you figure out where you are, you can sort of figure out where you're going.
So have you done yours?
I have done mine through this book because it's not ready for publication, but it was a twofold process in trying to remember the things that I thought were important in my own life or the questions. And then I went outside myself to say, okay, if I wasn't me and I didn't believe in the things that I believe in and I didn't have the opinions that I have, what about the other people? You know, what about people who come from a completely different perspective than I do, what questions would I ask of them to help them remember? So the book is more of a compilation for anybody, but in doing it, I have created my own narrative as well to go along and start at the beginning and say, you know, what formed me? And some things, you know, your parents, obviously, mm-hmm. for most people, play a really important role. And the fact that my father died when I was 12 led to me getting in the radio business in a weird way. So it's all connected.
My guest is Charlie Serafin. He's an old friend, an old boss. And we're now reconnecting after 34 years, thanks to this book. You know, it's interesting because, and one of the reasons why I think this appealed to me is my one, I had a couple of very short breaks from radio, but I've been in radio my whole adult life. But one of them, after I was living up in the Boston area and I worked for a guy who was just nuts. He was an owner, station owners. Wonderful that he, you know, in the era of consolidation, everything, he owned radio stations, but he was a control freak and he was a nut. And it soured me on radio. Between that and Clear Channel, I'm like, I've had enough. And I moved back down to Florida. My father had just died and I started doing video production. I would do, it was like, you know, they used to do a family, God, what was it called? Like the VH1, would do the life story. I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but doing family histories. And I would, you know, take people's old home movies and photographs and interview them to have them tell their story and create a video, the family history. And I loved doing the creative stuff. I just hated the selling part of it and wound up getting back into radio, of course, after that. But I still think that's such a great idea. And I especially loved talking with older people. And I think it's, I think every person who still has elderly parents or parents who are getting on up there or, grandparents should sit down with a tape recorder, video, your phone. Right now, everybody's got a video camera and just ask them questions because I realized I don't know how my parents met. I don't know. We know so little of their histories because especially that generation was very, close mouth. They didn't share a lot of it. And I don't know right. those things. I want the, our elders to share that stuff with us. I want us to share with our kids. And so this is one way of doing it. So that would just be incorporating video and audio into it, but share the stories.
I have a friend in New York, that I just met through the book, through a mutual acquaintance and said, you guys need to talk. And, he has a company that's, mine is The Story of Your Life and his is yourlifestory.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he does for a fee is he will do a video exchange like we're doing now mm-hmm. with one of your elderly relatives, whoever you'd like to do it, or with you if you want to share your story. And he will interview you and go through and ask you the types of questions that we talk about in the book to sort of get to not only where did your mom and dad meet, but what was it about your mother that attracted your father right. to her? What qualities did she have or what little funny little quirks or foibles that she exhibited that were really attractive to him? And those things that would normally be left out of any type of historical record are the nuggets that really stick with people because we all have them. We're all completely unique. And that's the value of sharing. And with our technology, there's no excuse now not to do it.
I so agree. And this is a great impetus for people to start just writing down your thoughts. I mean, and I often, my daughter is coming in tonight. She's flying in from Florida. I haven't seen her in 4 months. It's the longest we've ever been apart. And so I'm very excited. I'm taking off the rest of the week and next week while she's here. But you know, part of the thing is, I have this external hard drive. See, it says Allison's videos. I'm putting everything on here for her so she's got it all. She doesn't want to see it now, but you know what? In 20 years, if I'm gone, she may want to, and I want to make sure she knows where all my passwords are and everything like that. I want her to have these stories. I want her to know as much as I know about my parents, which isn't much, and to be able to just have it. And again, it's not for wide consumption. It's for her. It's for her, for years in the future after I'm gone. But that's how we live on, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing, there were two things. One, I would say in about 50 years when you're not here, because you definitely look like you got a few more miles to go. But I think that there are people out there who are listening to us right now and they're thinking, well, my life wasn't that exciting. But when you go through and you answer some of the questions, I'm going to dig up some memories that you haven't thought about in a really long time. And what I tell people is you have experienced something. I don't know what that was, whether it was kind of like a miracle or whether it was just like a weirdness or a strangeness or whatever. But there are things that you've experienced in your life that no human being that was ever born on the planet or will ever come after you has ever experienced. You saw something, whether it was a tree falling or a bird doing something or whatever it was, because we all have them. We have these real weird little nuggets of experiences. And you look around and you say, did anybody else see that? And there was no one there, just you, and you saw it and you experienced it. So when people start remembering those kinds of things, and they capture those memories, they have the opportunity to create a really unique story because their life is totally unique. And if you do a good job with it in presenting it, you could have the opportunity in the digital age to go viral.
That's right.
Your obituary, you could be a lot more famous in death than you were in life if you just tell your story, and people would go like, oh yeah, that's the guy who saw the bird land on the whale's back, and then the whale jumped out of the water, and then the bird flew up, and then the bird came down and landed on the whale's back again. Well, I'm sure that's happened. I didn't see it, but maybe somebody listening did, or some other little nugget. And the other thing about memories is when you remember one and you really start thinking about it, it connects to another one from a different era and a different time. And you go, oh yeah, that other time, I remember when this happened, I was going down a hill and I thought I was going to crash into the tree. And all of a sudden the road turned and the car turned with it. And I didn't crash into the tree. And we all have those.
And maybe
that's
the thing,
from my own life.
Maybe the things that you remember say something about you, like, okay, I've got a memory. So when we moved to Florida from New York when I was 11. Florida is very hot and humid. Well, there was a Lion Country Safari, and one day we went through the Lion Country Safari. Now, I'm 11, my younger sister's 6, my older sister's 14 or whatever, and it's just boring because it's hot and the animals are all in the shade. And my dad's like, oh, look over there, there's some movement. And I look, and he's like, no, look over there. Well, I looked because he told us to turn away, and two lions were going at it. And he noticed it was movement, so he told us to look, but they were stripping. So he's like, no, look over there. And that has stuck with me all these years. I don't know what it says about me.
See, there you go. Yeah, yeah. So
memory.
It was like your first experience with lion sex, Yeah, and you remember it. So what does that say about you, Nicole? That's the question, isn't it?
Well, it says my dad, who was a smut peddler, he published the Spanish language, like Playboy magazines, he wanted to protect his children from lions fucking. We can say fucking because we're on the internet. I guess this is my memory.
There you go. Yep, there you go.
See,
you're on the road now.
Me,
you see, you're on the way.
There you
go. You're on the way.
I got to start writing. So books and talking and lecturing, and this is what you're doing now and semi-retired maybe?
Yeah, I guess. I guess you'd call it that. I did a radio show too when I first moved up here. It's a little one radio station town with a little AM FM. And a guy quit after doing this show for 25 years, I think, or something like that. And he walked out in a huff, and the owner called me and said, hey, I need your help. Will you come in and help me? And he said, would you like to do the news in the morning? And I went,
no.
Nah. Well, first he asked me, would you like to buy the station? I said, no. Would you like to run the station? I said, no. And then he said, well, would you do this show? And I said, well, when is it? And he goes, it's 9 to 10 every morning. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I interviewed all the local muckety mucks and met all the local politicians. And then we turned it into a revenue generator so people could buy an hour for $200 and come in and hype their business.
Oh, that's just you. You're behind brokered radio. God, I hate that.
But I try to make it as fun as I could and get them to tell personal stories about themselves and embarrassing things. But after 3 years, I realized that was enough. It was becoming definitely not worth my time.
I have been, since I formally retired,
and we put that in air quotes, I've been writing and I've finished the 3 books, and I'm about 2/3 through a 4th book, which is going to be completely different than the trilogy. The first ones are all what I would call inspirational. They're all of the heart, get you to think about your life, think about your decisions, think about where you're going, where you've been, that sort of thing. This next one is going to be radio adventures, and you'll probably be in it, Nicole, because I'm just trying to go through and remember. And you've just reminded me of that whole transition time. I had never been a general manager before, so I didn't know what it was to walk into a radio station. And my my directive from corporate was to blow it up, basically, you know, and, you know, start over and see what you can do because it wasn't performing well. So I didn't know any of the people, which I don't know if you remember the story or not, but it's one of my favorite radio stories when Deirdre resigned on the air. Do you happen to remember that?
No.
She was doing brunch with the Beatles.
Okay.
Yeah, she resigned, and she had come in and asked for a raise, and I had been there about a week, probably after your resignation and then change of heart. And so this other woman came, went to the program director and said, you know, I want a raise. And he said, well, he came to me and she wants a raise. I said, just tell her to chill. I just got here. You know, right. I don't know what we're doing yet or anything else. And so she went on the air, took a job at KLSX,
right,
doing the brunch with the Beatles or breakfast with the Beatles, whatever they called it. And when she went over there, she said, and how do you like that, Dave and Charlie, or some nasty thing when she, you know, when she resigned on the air, right? And so when I came in on Monday morning, the staff was really in an uproar and going like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that she did this and everything else. And, you know, we got to do something. So I had learned a trick, a small market radio trick, and I used it in Los Angeles. And I think this has nothing to do with anything, but here's how the story goes. So I told everybody, you included, I assume you had to be there during this time. I said, so when the press calls, you say, no one can talk about it. No one, no comment, except they have to talk to Charlie. And when I talked to them, I had my shtick, but I recorded an apology and I went on the air and we played it every half hour for most of the day. And it said something like, you know, the formal, the vice president or general manager, Charlie Seraf. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to apologize for what you heard on the radio on our program, Breakfast with the Beatles or Brunch with the Beatles. I forgot the title on Sunday morning. And I want to assure you that nothing like that will ever be heard on this radio station again. We did not condone the language and we did not approve of it. And that's all I have to say, right? So I did this apology. And so the LA Times, I know somewhere in my scrapbook, I do have a little clip, but the LA Times called and said, you know, well, we heard that she said, fuck you. And I said, I'm not going to confirm or deny. I'm not going to make any comment. Of course, she didn't say anything like that. But but my denial or refused to comment. So the LA Times actually printed that when she resigned, she went on the air and used the F word, as they put it back then, right, to resign. So we got a lot of publicity out of that.
Well, you were big on that, getting publicity. And in fact, I don't know if you remember, because now we're going into the weeds, but when we were KNX FM, which was like the mellow rock. I still have some KNX posters in here. But then we became 93.1, and we were sort of like the Arrow or Jack format before they existed. And then
that was my favorite station, by the way. And we all hoped that we could have kept that, but corporate wouldn't allow us to. That really pissed me off.
Well, and I have ads that I put together with you, I guess, like a full page ad. And it wasn't in the LA Times. It was the LA Herald Examiner, which doesn't exist anymore. Okay. And one was like, give us the finger. It was a play on words, obviously. It was a push the button. One was, if you don't listen, we're all going to lose our jobs or something like that. You always try to, you know, stir things up to get us some publicity. And I guess we got some.
It was Hollywood, you know. I mean, there we are with Yoko, and I had forgotten that. We went to Capitol Records. I remember now, you know. It's like, wow, we did a lot of really cool things. We did a sold out concert at the Hollywood Bowl.
We did.
With a bunch of oldies acts.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Maybe after you left. I don't know if you were there still or not, but.
Was the Hollywood Bowl or the Greek? I think it was the Greek.
No, that was the Hollywood Bowl.
Maybe it was after I left. Because I don't remember doing a show at the Hollywood Bowl. I remember the stages I've been on. The Hollywood Bowl, I haven't. But anyway, it was a good time. Here was one of our buses. I'm a pack rat. I keep things. That was one of our bus billboards. Yeah. So anyway,
there you go.
I got all kinds of stuff. But I think the only picture I have of us is with Yoko, and that's certainly one to. I'll send you a copy of it.
There's a story that goes with that billboard. So those are kings. Those are king bus sides, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we did that campaign, I didn't exactly tell my boss in New York that we were doing, which eventually is what got me fired. But they told me that we had a bonus because we bought a big showing, and they said, I can bonus you some boards. And I said, okay, I want to take the couple of bus sides like that, king bus sides, and I want to put them in Chicago. I want to put them in New York, and I want to put them in Boston, and I think maybe Miami. I mean, I just picked some major markets just for the hell of it. And so my boss, who wasn't aware of the campaign, called me in a kind of a breathless manner one day, because he said he stepped off the curb in Manhattan and almost got hit by a bus. And when he looked up at the bus, it was our bus side on it. And he said, what in the hell are you doing spending money advertising in New York? And I had to say, no, you don't understand. It was a bonus, you know. It didn't cost us anything extra. But I thought, where are the advertising agencies that are going to buy us on a national level?
Right.
And maybe they should be, maybe one of them will see it. And we even tailored it later on to put the names of some significant buyers at different agencies and said, you know, Mary Lynn, if you see this, call this number, you know, or call KODJ and claim your prize. And we made up some nice little prizes we could give to advertising buyers at big media companies.
Wow. So, the good old days. That's creativity. And it's not, things aren't as creative now. I think everything is so canned these days. It's just not, it's a whole different world. So anyway, we've already run over. I do this from time
Sorry
to time.
About because, that.
No, it's okay. It's up to me. I could have brought up the music. It's like, okay, we're out of time. Bye. But we run late. We're on the Progressive Voices Network. And I know every day when an hour is up, we just cut off. But then, you know, people who are watching on video or the other streams or get the podcast, they get the whole thing. So they know. They know that I do this. Charlie Serafin, it was great to catch up with you. It's been a long time, and we're both in Arizona. Maybe we'll hang out one of these days.
I'm looking forward to it. And thank you very much for inviting me on your program. Continued success to you, and hope that everybody contributes. If you haven't signed up to contribute, to send in your monthly contribution to the Nicole Sandler Show, you need to get on the stick and get after it, because without your support, she can't continue to bring you interesting programs.
Exactly. See, you said it better than I could. And the book, The Story of Your Life, Write Your Own Obituary, is available at Amazon.com, I'm guessing. And probably that's the best place to get it.
Barnes & Noble and whatever. I mean, it's available through various outlets. And if you go looking for it, I'm sure you can find it. It's down the page a bit, but it's there, as well as all my other books, and they're all worth reading because I wrote them. I took the time to write them. You could take time to
read
them. I
love it. My favorite though. Hold on. I gotta grab this. So Charlie sent me the three books, and he put a little inscription on each of them. And then this one, it's got two of them on there. And the first one says, Dr. Phil, thanks for helping so many people. May you continue to be blessed. And then above it, you wrote, Nicole, grab this by mistake. Funny irony. It was never delivered. Return to me. I can get you another copy if you like. That's fine, because it's the perfect book to do that with. One stupid mistake.
It was a really stupid mistake. I was rushing off to the post office to mail your books, and I grabbed it, not paying any attention to the fact that that's one that was a reject by Dr. Phil.
I love it.
I sent a number of them to a lot of, you know, some of them, I got a really nice letter back from Dear Abby.
Hmm.
I sent her a book, and she said, thank you very much, you know. It looks like it's a great book, and good luck to you or something. So I thought that was kind of cute, but
Very
Dr. Phil's just got returned without being open.
And somehow that makes perfect sense. So anyway. All right, Charlie, it was great to see you. We'll talk. Stay in touch. Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Charlie Serafin, everybody.
Bye.
All right. And with that, I'm out of here. So I will post today's show. I'll try to remember to podcast the shows that I have set up for the next 5 days. They will certainly be on Progressive Voices. They'll stream, you know, in the usual places, and I'll post them. You'll get them. And I'll see you a week from tomorrow. I'm going off to have some fun with my kid. All right. Have a great night. And let's see what we're still waiting on the Judge Engoron. That's not going to happen until I get back. I'm just assuring you now. All right. And with that, peace out, everyone.